symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
Hello and welcome to the Monday Mailbag with Dr. Tom Pritchard. This is Paul Bromwell, and I'm joined by the doctor himself. Dr. Tom, how are you this week?
I'm doing great this week, Paul. Good to see you last week. And, man, I'm waiting for this week to get started again. We're on our fifth week in JPWA training, summer class. It's moving fast. And, wow, this year's gone by, too.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. I know you you started July 4th with your new class, and I wanted to hear how it was going. Things looking pretty well for you so far?
Going great. Have a great class. We just started having matches last night, and these guys are moving right along.
And that's awesome. Speaking of moving right along, I saw you just a few weeks ago as we dropped this episode, moving right along down the aisleway there behind the scenes, exiting the Nashville Municipal Auditorium.
Yeah. What a night, man. What a night. I mean, a lot of people were expecting one thing and got another, and some people were expecting what they got, and I expected exactly what we got. It was a lot of fun seeing people, friends I haven't seen in a long time, and just being in that vibe, man. It was a really cool night.
Now, it was historic. Ric Flair's last match, which, by the way, if you haven't done so already, you can check it out. Go to Fight TV, and you want to make sure you definitely take part of that. It was cool to see you, Dr. Tom. So many people, like you said, it was like a family reunion, I'm sure, for many of the wrestlers. Just people all over when you're standing back there.
It was incredibly crowded back after that night. So, yeah, it was awesome.
Awesome. Well, hey, listen, let's jump into it because we have a lot of questions that we want to get to for this episode of The Mailbag. And again, we want to thank all of you for putting your questions in for Dr. Tom. We can't do it without you. And this week, Dr. Tom, we're going to start with Ryan Connolly. And he wrote in and said, great to hear your perspective and stories, Dr. Tom. We lost several great referees recently. Any memories of Dave Hebner or Tim White, and what makes referees like these two great and have a successful career?
Well, both Tim and Dave were great guys to have backstage, and I think that was the key to their success. They knew how to get along with the boys, they knew how to make the matches right, and they knew how to soothe the beast when it came out, and the matches might not have been working out, and the referee was there to calm everything down. And that's a hard job. And Tim White was a very nice guy, calming voice, reassuring voice in the ring for a lot of guys. And so was Dave Hebner. Dave, more so behind the scenes as an agent, was really a lot of help. And I don't know one person who didn't like Dave or Tim.
Yeah. But both great guys, both tremendous referees, and definitely two big losses for all of us as wrestling fans and just in general. So thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Ben Ledbetter's up next. By the way, Ben, I got to meet him at StarCast and came up and introduced himself, and it was so cool, Dr. Tom. Not only you said getting to see people there, getting to meet guys that write in on these shows and ask questions, and that was also a cool experience. But his question this week is, Dr. Tom, where do you stand on footwear in wrestling? Boots, tennis shoes, or barefoot? And what do you recommend your students to wear?
I recommend my students to wear professional wrestling boots. Get some pro gear. Don't go out to, like, you're not John Cena, you're not CM Punk, you're not Kevin Owens. So wear wrestling gear until you get to that point. John Cena wore wrestling gear, CM Punk wore wrestling gear. So I believe Kevin Owens did too. I'm not really familiar with his early days, but footwear, definitely professional wrestling boots. I'm not a big kick pad guy, and I don't really care for people going barefoot, but I understand if it's your gimmick, it's your gimmick.
Man, I don't understand how some of the guys, you know, I think about, you know, Kevin Von Erich, even Miro back when he was Rusev, the barefoot, Riddle, barefoot.
Yeah. Yeah. You can stub your toe. You can step on something. I mean, if that's the way they fight, you know, Riddle fought in the cage for a long time and he was an amateur, but I prefer professional wrestling.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. They just work better for me. And they look better in my opinion.
There you go. All right, Ben, thanks for the question. Richard is up next. Our buddy, he said, any good or bad memories from wrestling in Canada? Did you get the opportunity to train any Canadians?
I've trained many Canadians, Paul, by the way, and we've had quite a few in the last couple of years. And besides getting beat up by a girl in Canada, no, everything was fine.
any of the wrestlers that you train in Canada stick out to you as, hey, this is
Glenn Kalka. Glenn Kalka, many, many years ago, back 1996 was a big football player. He used to play for, I don't remember what team in Canada, but he came in for a tryout and was awesome, but it just didn't work out. But he stood out to me for a lot of reasons. He looked the part, he was the part, and he's one of those guys that if I looked at him, I say he fits.
Yeah,
but obviously it didn't work out. So
yeah. Good stuff there. Now listen, our buddy Winnebago Nutshot, he was cool. He said, listen, there's a lot of questions here. If you want to ask him different shows, no, we're gonna ask them all here. And because I love a lot of this stuff. So let's check it out. He says, we hear talk about different styles of American wrestling. Even the WWE seems to have its own style that Vince prefers. What are some of these subtle differences that we may not notice? Even Jeff Jarrett struggled a little bit to explain the WWE style and could say that it just feels more patient.
I don't know about feeling more patient, but I think that Vince certainly has a vision of what he feels wrestling should be. I think Triple H has a vision of how he feels wrestling should be as well. So I just think Vince, when he was in charge, had a grander perception and wanted it globally accepted. It certainly was in the 80s. He had the idea of bigger is better, grander, flashy, brighter. It's something that you can't help but notice. As far as the style of wrestling, it's always been performance. At the same time, some guys were so much better, and today some guys are so much better at it than others, and that's why this was not meant for everybody to go out and do or try. The ones who made it look great are certainly the ones who go down in history as icons. When you have your guys, let's go all the way back to a Buddy Rogers, or in the time and era and culture of a Dory Funk Jr. who fit that time, what the business was, he would go out and he would portray it as a contest and a wrestler. When Vince got it, Hulk Hogan had been wrestling for years, but Vince saw Hulk Hogan as a larger than life action figure come to life, cartoon, all these marketing products. So I just think it was a Vince preference and perception to get it on the main stage in the world, and it got there. Wasn't the first time I'd been there, but it was in more recent times it certainly was. And I think Vince just had his certain quirks and ideas, and that's what it called for at that time. And as the head of the company, he had that opportunity to let those ideas breed. Now that you have a more old school guy, I believe, I could be wrong, but Hunter has his views of what wrestling should be and are too. I know there's a change down at the PC where it's becoming more spot oriented. And that's what the fans want, that's what the fans should get. Again, real quick, Paul Bosch used to say, I like to go fishing, I like strawberries, but when I go fishing, I put worms on the hook because I'm trying to catch fish. If you're trying to get wrestling fans in the building, you give them what they want. In the future, not that long ago, it was Stone Cold Steve Austin, Bret Hart, Mankind, and guys like Triple H, Kevin Nash, Razor Ramon, that came out, and it was that hardcore, hard-hitting attitude style. And styles change all the time. So I don't think you can pinpoint it and say, this is what it is all the time. There should be a variety, and it should be something for everybody on the card.
All right. Good stuff there. And it's interesting though, as far as Winnebago, the point that he makes that if there are differences, for instance, take you, for instance, Dr. Tom, when you came up, you know, you had done Smoky Mountain, you'd worked in Continental, all these different places. when you came up and you got in there with the WWE, did you notice that you were asked to change a little bit of how you performed in the ring?
I don't believe it was more so how to perform in the ring, but how to present.
Okay.
And how to go about the presentation. You were doing the same, I don't want to say moves, but you were doing the same. We were doing the same style, but it was a presentation of taking your time, and you might get over this way down south, but we get over this way up north. And it was the description was always New York and the East Coast was kick and punch and big man stuff and brawling. In the South, it was more spot oriented, and you had your Tennessee tiptoe spots, you had your Southern ha-ha spots, and you had your action spots. That didn't always fly. Rock and Roll Express and Jimmy and I had a match in Boston, and we thought it was great. And for the South, it would have been great, but the Boston fans just absolutely hated it. Let us know, and we thought it was a great match, but nobody else did. So, yeah.
All right, there you go. Well, listen, his next question, any good Gino Hernandez stories? I have to go there. What are your thoughts on the rumors Paul Bosch was his real father? Bruce didn't shoot it down anywhere near the way he does most stuff he thinks is bullshit.
Well, here's the deal. Vince, Gino's mom and Paul's second wife looked very, very similar. I mean, they had red hair. They're both beautiful women. And it could have easily been confused. And I think the Dark Side of the Ring brought that up. They actually asked Gino's mom, you know, was Paul the father? And she laughed it down and talked about who Gino's dad was. And they actually read a note, a letter from Gino's dad at Gino's funeral. So that was thought of a long time ago because Paul had an affection for Gino and helped him out a whole lot. He treated Gino different than anybody else that came through Houston, in my opinion. So I don't really have any good Gino stories I can tell. I was around Gino quite a few times. So, and Gino was what you saw on TV, man. And sometimes he was even more amped up away from the cameras because he made sure everybody knew that he was making money and he was who he said he was because he lived the life. Every day
he lived the gimmick. Yeah.
That wasn't a gimmick with Gino. That was him.
That was real.
But from the time he was a kid, because we watched him grow up in the Coliseum too. Bruce and I went every Friday. Gino was there every Friday. He was just like 3 years, 4 years, maybe older than me. And we watched him grow up. And shortly after he debuted, a couple years after that, I started wrestling, and he was already on his way, man. He was a star.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right. His final question, he said, I have yet to see a stretcher match that I enjoyed. The way they work the stipulation pulls me too far out of the ability to lose myself in what I'm watching. Is there a stretcher match you can recommend that I might like? Is there a more old school stipulation match you weren't too crazy about for similar reasons of just not being able to get lost in it?
Well, the problem with that is, especially these days, is everybody thinks they're smart and knows what's going on. In the old days, they could do the stretcher match and make it a little more dramatic because the guys knew how to work. It's hard to get lost in it today because nobody understands the psychology of what the stretcher match is supposed to be. It's like a Texas death match or any one of those gimmick matches where you should do something even more extreme than you do in a regular match. Kind of like what Lesnar did with his tractor at SummerSlam.
Yes.
That's extreme. And it would call for extreme measures or extreme results. And I could see someone getting injured doing something like that. But other than being that extreme, you know, tipping the ring over with the tractor, there's not a whole lot that hasn't been done to the guys that wouldn't warrant a stretcher already. And now you're trying to do stuff to say, okay, we're going to go even more out on a limb and push the envelope than we already do. And the stipulation is you have to be carried out on a stretcher. It's hard to, we've gone so far over the line and so far past it, it's hard to lose yourself in that because you know, they do more stuff on a weekly basis and aren't carried out by a stretcher. So no, I kind of agree. And I just don't know. There's too many stipulations already as it is. And there's too many things that have been done. That's hard to reel it back in.
How about his follow-up question? Were there any other old school stipulations, maybe matches that you weren't really crazy about for some reason? You just couldn't
Most of the old school matches were unique for the time. And you know, you had Indian strap matches, chain matches, bull rope matches. And the guys who did those understood the gimmick and knew how to work the gimmick and would sell accordingly and use the psychology and make it work. These days, since you don't have the opportunity to see great workers and guys who are actual professionals on a daily basis go out there and do their craft, you're usually getting guys who are playing wrestler and then playing a part and thinking, boy, this would be cool. And they don't know how to do it. They have no feeling for it. They think it'd be great, but yeah, it doesn't come across as authentic. So no, not a whole lot I'd think about.
Okay. Well, buddy, we have Eric Sedan who's up next this week, and he said, what do you think of the whole NIL program that the WWE is doing? And for those that aren't familiar with it, it's the next in line. They launched that in December. It serves to recruit and develop potential future superstars, and it's all about enhancing their talent development process with their partnerships through college athletes from diverse athletic backgrounds. So Eric's question is, do athletes from another sport have the passion and love for the wrestling business that someone cutting their teeth on the indies would have? And would it be easier to teach someone wrestling from scratch than to reteach someone out of their bad habits?
I don't know that every college athlete has that passion. Some do, and some watched wrestling growing up and enjoyed it and had a passion for it. But a lot of those guys look down and still look down on professional wrestling as ha ha. Oh boy, this would be fun. Oh, I can do some stunts and I can go out there and do it. Not everybody, but a majority of who I've met through the years come in thinking it's one thing and find out it's something altogether different and lose interest when they find out. While yes, it should be fun, it's hard work if you're not in tune with how it's supposed to work. There is still basics and fundamentals. There are still some rules, and of course, there's always exceptions to the rules, but they don't always understand. They think they have to play a bad guy or play a good guy as opposed to being who they are and turn up the volume and have some personality, and have some talent along the way. This is unique. There's nothing else like professional wrestling. It's a hybrid of so many different facets that some guys have a hard time wrapping their head around it to be able to perform authentically, a Brock Lesnar, who is a legit athlete, but goes out there and gets a reaction of a superstar because Brock understands that this is performance, athletics, and so much more wrapped up into it. And a lot of guys coming from college saying, oh, I get to be a fake pro wrestler, yes, go out and have fun. And they don't hit it and approach it as this should be authentic to where people get lost in it. As we, the last question we talked about, get lost in the persona, get lost in the character, get lost in the entire experience. A lot of the college athletes watching it were just having fun. And let's have a couple beers, let's order a pizza and watch the pay-per-view. Then they get into it and figure out, oh, wait, you actually have to understand. You have to hit in 15 minutes. You've got to hit this, and this to lead up to the next episode after the pay-per-view, where you go from here, and all these other elements that nobody even thinks about, nobody even knows about. So they get excited when they get there, just like the other kid, Parker, was it Boudreaux?
Boudreaux.
Whatever his name was.
Yeah.
Right. He's gone pretty quick.
Yeah.
Because people get in there and they don't understand. It's not just going out there doing stunts and doing moves. You got to have feeling for this. You got to understand this. And it would help if you knew who came before you and knew what they did, but nobody really seems to care these days. I don't say nobody, but a lot of guys don't have a clue and don't really want to take the time to find out.
He's actually doing some stuff now with AEW. I know he's been on Dark and things like that, but you're right. I mean, you think there's probably a little cockiness, a little arrogance coming in, coming out from, hey, I've already dominated and I know college sports and this is, uh-huh. But you know, you mentioned Brock, you think Kurt Angle, two guys that they were always serious business and whatever they were going to tackle. And that's what you need, that mindset, that mind frame.
And both of those guys, Kurt and Brock, I don't believe Kurt especially respected pro wrestling until he got a piece of it.
That's right.
Got into it. And then he found out, he could have fun with this and still be Kurt Angle, and Brock was the same way.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good question. Amy Vaughn, our buddy who just got to see a little bit ago, said, Dr. Tom and Paul, can the public attend your school's graduation? Sounds right up my alley. Best.
Well, of course. Of course, because we do it usually at an event. Joe Cazana Promotions was the last one to host our last spring graduation. We're looking to do it again in September, I think it's September 24th, and Joe's looking for a place right now to promote. We did KC Gold down in Jackson, Tennessee, and some other places. So, the public can come because we do it at the live events.
Oh, there you go. All right. Well, hey, when we find out the next one, we'll have to start, as we do these and you find out, we'll have to let people know.
We will definitely do that.
All right. Very cool. Ben's back. Ben Ledbetter again. Dr. Tom, where are you on cage matches in modern times as a spectator? Do you prefer the big blue cage or the fence style cage?
I prefer the fence style cages. It was a little more brutal. You could take huge bumps into it. The guy can ram your head into it and you're going to feel it. But I think the visuals was a lot better. And I like cage matches if they're done correctly. And the idea with the cage match too was the loser had to climb out, and it wasn't about walking out the door. In the old days, in the 70s, even in the 60s, the idea was you had to climb over the cage to win. They weren't going to open the door for you, but then they realized eventually that not everybody was able to climb.
That's right.
So that's why they had to open the door and make that stipulation. But I'm all for cage matches if you can do them well and if you can get some really good blood, because I think there's where the drama comes from. You know, you have this steel covering the ring and it's unusual. And if you ram somebody's face in the cage and there's no blood, well, okay, it's not as bad, but it's sure as hell not as good.
And two, what's the story that's going to get us there? Does it make sense? Why does it warrant a steel cage?
Well, right. You know, you're usually because outside interference, or the guy keeps running, you know, we're going to put an end to this. It was a blow off to a long running angle. So,
yeah, that's right. Didn't want interference from the outside, or you're not running out anywhere because you've done it multiple times through the storyline and you're not escaping this time. So it's got to make sense too. So I love it. All right, Terry Weaver is up next. He says, Dr. Tom and Paul, I hope you both are doing well. It's great to hear from you, Terry. He says, Dr. Tom, I apologize if this is something that's been covered before, but when you have a class to graduate from the school, are there any individual awards given in the class, or do you identify someone as best in class or something similar? If not, what are your thoughts on that type of thing?
We're not doing it right now, but certainly that is a great idea to ponder and look around, but I want everybody to have a great experience. I want everybody to go out and enjoy what they're doing. I want them to enjoy the hard work that they have accomplished and do what they do, because for a lot of people this is the first time and they're looking for the experience. So do we have some who stand out more than others? Of course, but we haven't yet, not that we won't, but I haven't taking that step and saying, hey, we're going to recognize this guy and that one as best in class. We just haven't. No reason why. We just haven't. Good idea, though. I will keep that in mind.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Terry. I like it. All right. Two more questions for this week's episode. Zach likes up next. He says, Dr. Tom, who, in your opinion, is the best wrestler you have trained and why?
You know, that really is a hard question, but look, The Rock doesn't count.
Yeah.
The Rock was a special guy and he grew up in the business. So I can't sit here and say, boy, I tell you, because he had it. And I'm happy to have had that opportunity, but I think the one who, right now, present day, and I'll probably get heat for this one too. But Channing Lawrence, the guy with Tony D'Angelo, he talk about improvements, talk about putting the work in, talk about going the extra mile, taught himself how to sew so he can make his own ring gear, his own trunks and tights for not only himself, but he had a tag team partner, and he made it for both of them. The robes, the entrance, he went the extra mile. They bought lights. They bought a smoke machine just for the independent shows around here, and took that extra step. And did they get heat in the dressing room? Of course they did, because nobody else thought about it. And nobody else thought how to improve their entrance, how to improve their presentation. He went to the gym. He did everything you had to do to improve, to change his appearance, and change his presentation. So if we're talking about, the guy who did the most to get the most, he got signed. And he's making headway. He's understanding how the business works, being in the PC. He's understanding that when we say you got to do whatever it takes, he's understanding that whatever it takes is certainly whatever it takes. And sometimes it takes those 20-hour days. And if you ever had a 20-hour day, you know that they're not for everybody. And there's not just one 20-hour day. Sometimes there's 18, sometimes there's 16-hour days. And sometimes you ain't going to get any sleep for a couple days, and you're working and doing everything you got to do.
So for those that don't watch NXT, that's where you can find Tony D'Angelo. So Dr. Tom, tell me about his progression. He came to you and he came to your school, graduated from your school, and then
we're not talking about Tony D'Angelo. We're talking about Channing Lawrence. With Tony D'Angelo.
Gotcha. Okay.
He's Stacks, I think. No, he was Jake the Mother Lover Tucker.
Gotcha. Okay.
He came to school, average looking guy. He had done some stuff at the PC before with Totino's Pizza. He won the contest, and then he came to the school. He talked a good, great game. But a lot of people talk great game. He's just the one who followed through. He's the one who took it to another level. He started dressing differently than everybody else, which, of course, you're going to get shit for. And you're going to say, oh, what are you wearing those for? And so, hey, man, what? And so he'd bring a picture of me from years ago and say, hey, why are you clowning on me? Look what you're wearing. I said, yes, exactly. People are going to clown on you. People are going to say things to you. How are you going to react to that? Are you going to take it like a star? Are you going to say, hey, man, for what it is, we're seeing your reaction, and you're reacting great. So he's done all these things. He's learned how to play the game, because this is what it should be. It should be fun, but it's business. You should be entertaining. You should be someone that people want to be around, not negative. Even when it's so easy to be negative, even when you're being beat down, you got to find what things you're grateful for. And that's what he's done. So I think if modern day, from the JPWA, I know that wasn't the question, but modern day, I'm going to have to go with Channing Lawrence right now.
All right. That's cool. I just wanted to clarify too, exactly, make sure I knew who it was, because I'm going to watch him a little differently now, knowing that he's a product of your school and just kind of the backstory that you gave us.
Watch Ivy Nile too. Ivy Niles.
Okay. When
Emily Anzulis came from us too.
Ivy Nile. Very cool. All right. There's two to watch, guys. And that's very cool. DJ Driscoll, last question for this week's mailbag. Dr. Tom, were you ever given a persona out of the box of gimmicks? If not, what is a gimmick or job vocation you could have sold as a wrestler?
First of all, no, and I'm really hot about that. I was not given a gimmick out of the box of gimmicks. No, man, I don't know that I even sold a vocation. I didn't know I sold a vocation as a wrestler when I was a wrestler.
Stop.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So no, I really don't have.
Or you were a body Donna. I mean, does that count?
Hey, Paul, if I can get through the screen right now, I swear to God, I would choke the living dog shit out of you. But anyway, no, I was a doctor.
That's right.
That was about it. Yeah.
The doctor of desire, right? Yeah.
Well, and if I ever had to operate on desire again,
Let me tell you something. I was just happened. Me and JR are going to be watching. Well, as this comes out, we will have already watched. It might be me and JR. I don't know. We don't know how these things work. We just do what we're told. But on an upcoming episode of Grilling JR, there's they're going back to watch a Smoky Mountain Wrestling episode. And you are in there, and the Heavenly Bodies wrestle. Jim Cornette introduces you as the Doctor of Desire, Dr. Tom Pritchard. And then he hands the mic to you, and you introduce Jim Cornette, and you and Gigolo Jimmy Del Rey. But that episode will have already dropped by the time this airs. But yeah, Jim, it's his opening night coming back from the WWE, and he is hosting an event there for Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and they're going to cover that.
Awesome. Well, yeah, give JR my best, because I had a lot of fun too.
Yeah, and
JR and in a Smoky Mountain, by the way.
And hold on, I'm going to tell you exactly what it is. It's Smoky Mountain Wrestling from August 13th, 1994. So that's the actual card there. So it's going to be a good one. So check that out, guys. You get to see. It's a watch along. You'll get to see Dr. Tom and all his glory in action. So there you go. Well, Dr. Tom, this has been fun, man. This is going to wrap us up for this week's mailbag. But before we get out of here, I want you to make sure they're aware of where they can find out more about your school, your book, your T-shirts.
You can find everything at jpwrestlingacademy.com. It's on the front page. It training. It'll take you to the front page. You can check out our schedule. You can have an application. You can also check out my curriculum and order it from there too. So jpwrestlingacademy.com.
There you go. All things Dr. Tom Pritchard. Guys, continue to send your questions in. We appreciate it. We love it. I already have a laundry list of questions ready to go for the next episode. And this is awesome. It's entertaining. Listen, Dr. Tom has all kinds of experience, and his experience continues on, not only in the form of future talent in the business, but man, I just saw him involved at Ric Flair's last match. If you have questions about that, post it. I'm not going to tell you what he did there.
Let me tell you real quick before we leave. That was an awesome night for a lot of reasons, man. Sin Bodhi and I were hooking up from the time we got in. And Sin is a great character. He's a passionate coach too. But oh my God, Road Dogg was in charge. Scott Armstrong was there. There was a lot of people that we were just having back and forth with, having a lot of fun, man. It was a great weekend.
Can't wait, man. Well, listen, we'll have some stories from that. But until next time, he's Dr. Tom Pritchard. This is Paul Bromwell. We'll see you right back here on The Mailbag with Dr. Tom.